We talked to Noah and Becky a year and a half ago when they were planning their gap year, smack dab in the middle of their FI journey. Well, now they're back from that gap year and they're back working in corporate America and they're super happy. Let's hear all about what the year was like, if they have any regrets from taking a gap year, exactly how much they spent, and then now what their plan is for financial independence moving forward.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast. We have Becky and Noah back again. Welcome to the show, Becky and Noah.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be back.
We're really excited to catch up with you. It's been a while since you were on, and you guys have been doing a ton of fun stuff since then. So can you give us a quick 90-second rundown of who you two are before we start getting into the details of what you guys have been up to?
Sure. So I think it's been like a year and a half now. And the last time we talked, we were planning this crazy idea of both quitting our jobs and taking a year off. So over the last year or so, we actually put that plan into motion and quit our jobs and then road tripped around the country for just about 12 months straight. Leading into that, we really got into the FI movement. We had a high savings rate living in Seattle, saved up a bunch of money, probably made it about halfway to FI-ish. We don't really know what our FI number is at this point in our lives. We made all the finances work, took the time off, traveled all over the country, and then we just kind of settled back into regular life. So we settled into Denver for just a couple months, and I kind of went headlong into a job search, and then that job search led us to Silicon Valley, the Bay Area. So we're just settling into there and starting on the next chapter of our lives.
What are some main takeaways that you have from this trip around the U.S.? What did you like? What were you surprised about? What did you learn? I'm asking way too many questions. I'll just let you talk.
I was really surprised at how comfortable I was living out of my car. We mostly stayed in hotels. We were friends and family, a few camping trips here and there, but I was very surprised at how little we had and how comfortable I was. So that was really awesome to figure out. It was also nice. We didn't really plan a whole lot. We had a skeleton outline of where we wanted to go and what we wanted to see, but our day-to-day adventures were mostly sporadic and kind of we just figured it out as we went. And I found that better for us, not planning and not having a specific outline of what you want to do makes it a little bit more exciting, and you're not as disappointed when things don't go quite as planned.
When I had to move to Des Moines for work, I went in with very low expectations of how it was going to go, and I was completely blown away. It was a lot of fun. So I'm not saying go in with low expectations that it's going to suck and then be pleasantly surprised when it's awesome, but not thinking that it's going to be awesome and then being disappointed when it's pretty good is a little rough to live your life.
Yeah, agreed.
Noah, what were your takeaways?
I think the biggest one is, like Becky said, like we can really live lean. We discovered that there's so much in the U.S. Even spending an entire year traveling around, there's still at least a dozen places that we didn't make it to, and we want to go back and explore more. The other thing is just like how great the financial independence community is in general. Like, we went to a couple Camp FI events and met a bunch of different people, and everyone was so friendly and offered us places to stay while we were on our trip and everything else, and had a lot of community support as we were on this adventure. It was great.
Did you guys spend down all the money you had set aside? I remember you saying you set aside a certain amount in cash. Can you just refresh us of the details and how did it work out?
Yeah. So in Seattle, we were spending about high 50s to low 60 grand per year. And we had no idea how much this trip would cost. We were subsidizing a large percentage of it with the hotel points that we've earned from travel hacking and credit cards. So we knew lodging shouldn't be too bad, but we really didn't know what we would do, what we would spend, what our week to week life would look like. As Becky mentioned, we didn't plan more than a couple weeks in advance at any given time. So we ended up setting aside a full year's worth of expenses in Seattle, so about 60 grand. And the actual trip only had cost us about 42 grand for the whole year. So we came in, I guess, under budget and with plenty of buffer to spare as we transitioned into new jobs and figured out where we were going to live.
What are some pieces of advice that you have for people who might want to take a year-long gap trip?
If you're considering doing something like this and you're on the FI journey at the same time, I wouldn't do it right at the beginning. I would make sure you have a pretty good amount of savings to where you're not going to set yourself too far back. Because we were about halfway to FI at the time, I think that was like a good sweet spot. to where we'll probably reach FI about 1 year later. But because we already had a decent amount saved away ahead of time, it was able to compound while we were traveling, and our net worth didn't change drastically over the course of the whole trip, even as we weren't bringing in an income. And that, whereas if you did it at the beginning of your journey to FI, the compounding might hit you a little bit harder than that. But I think the biggest thing is to just plan it out financially, make sure you have enough saved away. I wouldn't just do it as an impromptu thing and quit your job and start traveling tomorrow. Definitely put some thought into it. It probably took about 6 to 7 months of us formulating this idea and then putting a plan into action before we actually took off on the road. There's a lot of logistics that goes into it, depending on what kind of gap you want to take and what you want to do on that gap and what you're going to do with all of your stuff and money in the meantime.
I would also add, talk to your employer. We did a year, but you can do less than that if your employer will let you take like a 6-month sabbatical. We felt pretty comfortable being in engineering and nursing that we would get a job after we finished this year. And I am still in the process of looking, but Noah obviously didn't have too much of a trouble getting a good job. So we felt comfortable taking that year off, knowing that we could go back to work and not be stuck.
Do you think having the kinds of jobs that you two do, Noah, you're in tech, Becky, you're a nurse, do you think that those made a difference in being able to get employment after your trip?
Yeah, I think that was a huge part of it. Both of the fields that we're in are very in demand right now, and I don't know if they will be forever. But at least when we left on our trip, there was a lot of companies hiring pretty much all over the country for both of our professions. That was a big part of why we felt comfortable basically quitting without a specific plan of what we would do at the end of this trip. We knew we would go back to work, and we felt comfortable that we could find jobs in our sector. For someone in a totally different sector that's maybe like going out of demand or has more people coming in than going out, it would be a lot riskier to do this sort of trip. So you definitely have to take the current job market for your specific field or your specialty and make sure that you have a plan for when your gap ends.
What was it like, Noah, interviewing when you came back?
It was interesting. So at least in tech, it's a lot more problem focused, to where I go into a room with somebody for an hour and they give me a problem and then I write code on the whiteboard. It's a lot less personal stories of tell me about a time when or those types of interviews. So I really spent about a month studying, reviewing problems, reading a lot of books on interviewing and that sort of stuff. And I ended up talking to about 10 different companies in various stages of the interview process. I ended up coming away with a couple offers. It was interesting, but it was definitely doable. It wasn't too intimidating.
Did anyone ask you questions about your gap year?
I was usually the person that actually brought it up in the conversation, whenever they just kind of gave me an opportunity to tell them about myself or whatever. I definitely wasn't trying to hide it or shy about it. Like, my resume obviously reflected that I hadn't worked for the past year, and that didn't seem to bother anybody. Just kind of move past it and be like, oh, that's really cool. I wish I could do something like that. And then we got into the interview. I don't think it really hurt me or helped me in either direction. I think they treated me like any other candidate, despite having a gap like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I had a gap on my resume and I was asked about it all the time. So it's interesting that they just didn't care.
Yeah, it might just be the field that I'm in.
True.
I haven't started interviewing yet, but we'll see if that makes a difference, because I do have a slightly longer gap because it's been almost 2 years since I've worked, since I quit before Noah did. But I still think nursing is in high demand, so I shouldn't have an issue finding something.
So, Becky, you quit your job because of the mental aspects of it that were getting pretty overwhelming for you. Do you feel like this helped step back and recover from that experience? And do you think you're ready to go back again and face that kind of environment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I was definitely burnt out in my profession working 5 years on nights and shift work and different corporations buying other corporations at my hospital. It was just a very stressful situation. And so being able to take this time off and focus on myself, I don't think I've ever actually done that in my entire life. Like, Noah's like, you need to actually take care of yourself and focus on you. And I was able to do that for an entire year. And it was awesome. I actually kind of figured out who I am and kind of what I want to do. And I'm excited to go back into work and actually have control over it. I don't think I ever felt that I had a say in my job as a nurse. You kind of just do what you're told. And I have a much different perspective now. And I'm going to be a little bit more picky in the job that I choose and definitely be a little bit more in control and have that power to say no. And yeah, I'm really excited to kind of see where it goes.
Do you guys have any regrets or negative feelings about the gap year? Because I think the whole time we were talking to you the last episode, and now you're so optimistic, and why wouldn't someone do this? But a lot of us don't do this because we have a lot of fear of giving up a year's worth of savings, fear of something happening, fear of not being able to get a job again, you know, all these things. Are you guys truly not experiencing those negative emotions? Or is it that the positive benefits have just been overwhelming me more so than those?
At least at the time when we planned this whole out, where we both were in our professions and our point in life, like I think this gap year made a lot of sense for us. But it's going to be different for everyone else. All those fears you mentioned are perfectly legitimate, depending on what career you're in, how soon you want to reach FI, and why you want to reach FI, what your plans are for after FI, are all going to influence whether or not something like this makes sense for you. We just kind of went for it and figured it out as we went. There were parts where we started out the trip traveling way too aggressively. Like we were used to doing quick weekend trips and trying to cram as much as possible. And we kind of got burnt out in the first few weeks and then settled into a more comfortable pace of we'd settle into a place for 4 or 5 days and schedule or do things about half of those days. And we spent a lot of time just doing our own thing, whether that was hanging out in the hotel or going on a walk or doing a puzzle or something like that. We really kind of started scheduling downtime into our trip that actually helped us find a good pace. And then we made it about 10, 11 months before we started really kind of craving more of a routine, kind of being in one place for a while. And that's going to be different for everybody, like how long you actually want to travel or be on the road or how often you want to switch locations. So we never got that perfect, but I think we found a really good rhythm in the middle to where we're able to see a bunch of things, but also not feel uncomfortable on the trip. Back to your question, do we have any regrets? There's nothing specific that comes to mind. Obviously, we were nervous quitting our jobs and we're nervous getting back into the job market. But now that we've kind of at least jumped over that first big hurdle and figured out where we're going to live, one of us is employed and the other one is right on the track to be there as well. I would say we don't have any regrets looking back. I don't know if Becky wants to add anything to that.
No, I definitely don't. And I know it's hard for people. For us, we didn't know how much this trip was going to cost us, but money was never a concern for us. We never were like, are we going to run out of money or are we going to have to stop this sooner and go back to work? And I think just having that safety egg of being halfway to FI will let us be really comfortable with living how we wanted to live and realizing that it didn't cost as much as we thought it would. And so that was really awesome.
Except when you're in the Grand Canyon and you have to buy a new air mattress at the last possible second.
That was only $30. That's not going to break the bank, but
it was the new tires.
It was the new tires that we had to splurge on. Yeah, that was a fun week.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, they were posting about their experiences both on Noah's blog, Money Metagame, but also on Instagram and Facebook and all these other sources. So it was cool to follow along with you guys. I was definitely getting a little jealous as you were going about the country, taking all these cool pictures, doing all these cool things. So one thing I think it was interesting that I think, Noah, you mentioned, you actually were getting the itch to go back to routine after 11 months, because I can't relate to your experience because the longest vacation I've ever taken is probably a week. But typically on the Monday of the vacation, I'm super jazzed. I'm like, ooh, I have the whole week left. And then by Thursday, I'm like, oh, it's Thursday. That means there's only 3 days left and one day's a travel day. And then I have to go back, even though I do like my job. You didn't have that kind of, oh, it's October, we're getting close to the end of this year, this is ending, oh my God. You didn't have that moment. In fact, it was like the opposite, where you're like, yeah, it's kind of about time to settle back down.
Because it costs less than we expected, we actually considered going longer than a year, like a year and a half or a year and a few months or something like that. But after we talked about it and kind of really put some thought into it, what do we want to do next? How soon do we want to do it? The routine sounded really good to us. So we made our way back west and started getting back into it. We definitely had the means to travel longer or visit additional places at the end of our trip, but we chose the routine.
Yeah, I definitely get that when I take longer vacations. I've taken 1 3-week vacation and 1 2-week vacation. And the first half is like, yeah, I'm on vacation, this is awesome. And the second half is like, no, don't make me go back.
For us too, like by the end, it didn't really necessarily feel like a vacation anymore. It just felt like our life. We would get up and drive and then do something and then drive again. And it was just kind of like we got into this rhythm where we were kind of in a routine, but it wasn't in one spot. And I think that's what we were itching to get back to. We wanted to have a place to call home and have that comforting feeling of a home base. And that's really what we were looking for. Not necessarily that we wanted to get back to work, but we just wanted to be in one spot.
So after your trip was over, how did you decide where to end up as your new home base? Because you're not in the same place as you were when you left.
Right. So when we traveled through Colorado last May, we absolutely loved it. And it was somewhere that we definitely wanted to go back to. And so after we finished the year, we said, let's go back to Denver and temporarily settle there. And Noah was looking for work in that area specifically, but he was also broadening his search. We didn't want to rule out Seattle. We didn't want to rule out California. We do like the weather here, and there's obviously a lot of tech jobs in this area that we knew that he could potentially get a job at. But we decided on Denver just because it was one place that we definitely enjoyed, and we're like, oh, we could go back and live there. And then we kind of just went where the job took us. He got a really good offer here. That's what we decided to do.
It's kind of intoxicating to realize that you could just end up anywhere in the country that you wanted. You have the ultimate freedom and power to choose.
I have no idea where we're going to end up when we're actually FI and don't need to work. That just multiplies our options by like a million. So it's going to be really hard to figure out where we actually want to end up long term.
But you'll have plenty of time to figure it out.
And that's the thing. You can always change your mind. If you pick a place and you don't like it, you can pick again.
I was certainly a little disappointed you guys didn't pick Seattle, but I'm sure we'll see each other soon.
We'll make it back up there at some point.
Okay, cool. So one thing that I think is interesting and kind of refreshing and more relatable about your story, you weren't trying to be entrepreneurs in this time off. So a lot of people that we talk to, they're taking their time off and leaving their jobs so they can try their hand at entrepreneurship. And whatever cash they save is a little bit of runway for them. Did you guys try to do any business ventures when you were there? Was that even part of your plan? Or is it like, no, I'm just taking a year. We're just going to chill.
Yeah, we pretty much took a year to chill. I maintained the blog, which doesn't really make any money. And we did the Instagram page for fun, mostly so friends and family could keep track of our journey as we're going along. But yeah, we really didn't try to make money on the trip. We definitely just set this time aside for us to use the money we've already saved up and then travel for a year, see how we like it. Almost like a FI test run, I guess. Like, how do we do spending money instead of earning it and not working? So we didn't do any entrepreneurial adventures, didn't really make any money while we were on the trip. Yeah, it was just all freedom, I guess.
We do have our house in Seattle still that is a rental at the moment. So that was our only sort of side hustle, but it was basically just breaking even. We rented it so that it would pay for our mortgage, and it's been doing fine. So we have not been maintaining it. We have a property manager who's been awesome. So we've been really hands off, which has been nice. I mean, that would be the only thing I could think of as like a side hustle, but we didn't even really take that into consideration as far as getting us money or anything like that.
Yeah, it was totally passive and it was actually break even. So I think it's still safe to say we didn't really make any money this whole year.
Are you guys going to sell the condo or do you want to keep it?
That's a tricky question. Seattle's market's been up and down a little bit. Let's see. I think we have tenants in there until the summer. And then we'll probably rent it out for at least one more year. And that's when we reach the magical, have you lived in it 2 out of the last 5 years, to where we could sell it and not pay taxes on the capital gains or all of the appreciation over the past several years since we bought it. So that's when we'll have a big decision to make just over a year from now. I really don't know which way we'll go. If we feel comfortable in the market, if we want to keep a big chunk of our money in real estate, or if we just want to cash it out, throw it in index funds and not have to worry about it.
But you don't have to actually live in it for five. You could live in it straight for 2 years and sell, right?
Next year is when we will have already qualified for 2 out of the last 5 because it would have been rented out for about 3. We can always move back in somewhere down the line and do that same sort of thing. But I don't know if we would ever move back in there.
So Noah, can you clarify just for anyone who's not familiar with the rule for the 2 and the 5, what you mean?
If you own a property that you've lived in at least 2 out of the last 5 years, you can sell it and not pay capital gains tax on any of the appreciation. I think it's $250,000 for a single person or $500,000 for a couple, so that you can all bank all of that completely tax-free. To clarify our decision, at the moment, we've lived in it 3.5 out of the last 5 years. So we could sell it now and still take advantage of that. But that 1 year and a few months is kind of our deadline to make that decision and save a huge chunk on taxes if we do decide to sell it.
Got it. Because then it would have been rented out too long.
Yeah, it's where we'd cross under less than 2 years out of the last five.
Right.
So then we would have to pay full capital gains tax on all of the appreciation since we bought it.
Yeah, and that sucks.
It's a big chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine it'd be much bigger for you with your property in Seattle than it was for my tiny little property in Iowa.
Probably so. That was a nice little tax benefit for my husband and I when we sold our Colorado home in September. It was very nice. I like that rule quite a bit. So Noah and Becky, when you guys are looking forward to your FI journey, because you took this gap year, has anything changed? Maybe we'll start with financially. Are you distributing your money and your savings in a different manner than you were previously now that you've taken this gap year?
I don't think our overall strategy has changed. Based on projections, I think it moves out our FI date about a year. We took a year off, so we have to add about a year to the end. But because we had such that strong foundation to start with, it's not going to delay it any more than that. But no, our plan is pretty much the same. We have the rental property up there, which is kind of doing its own thing. But we'll max out all of our retirement accounts, throw it all into index funds, and then figure out where we actually want to live and what our life will look like. And then that'll help determine what our actual FI number is. So we don't really know when that'll be, but we're hoping it's when we're about 35 or 40, we can probably walk away from work pretty comfortable. But that's all to be determined.
Talk to us about determining your FI number. Because I'm kind of struggling with the same thing too. Like I know how much I spend now, but I don't really know if I know what I need for my FI number anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely makes a difference as to where you live. Moving to Silicon Valley, we realized that we don't know if we can retire here, especially if we don't have an income. But if we move back to the Midwest or even anywhere else, it would be a little bit easier. We do plan on having kids in the next couple of years, and that definitely changes the way you live and the way you spend money. Like we said earlier, we don't really have a specific number in mind. We have a rough estimate of what we would spend.
You know what we spend now, and we don't really know exactly what we're going to spend in this new location, but we'll figure that out in a year or so, how much a typical year will cost. And then at that point, it's like, where are we going to live? Like Becky said, kids are in the picture. Do we plan on doing any sort of work or bringing in any sort of income in this sort of early retirement? All of these things kind of come into play to kind of make it hard to actually choose an actual FI number. So it's something to where once we feel like we're fairly FI, we'll actually dive into it and make some bigger calls on whether or not we want to limit our options for the future, whether or not we want to work one more year and keep a bigger buffer or more options open. We're still in our 20s and we have no idea what our life is going to look like in our 30s and 40s and beyond. It's just such a long time horizon that it's hard to commit to any sort of number, even a rough estimate.
So Noah, in your job search, we know as millennials that switching jobs can be a huge boost to your income and your FI career trajectory in that way. Did you find that to be the case? Or did you find that you came back and you had to take a hit or you weren't able to kind of lock in a step up?
At least from my experience with talking to people in the software engineering tech world, you usually do get a bump when you switch jobs. And I can say that from where I was working in Seattle to where I'm working now was definitely an increase. Even taking cost of living into account, I think we're still going to be able to save more per year based on the income. So it was definitely a bump up. But I got other offers for other jobs that would have been about equal or even slightly less once you take cost of living into account. So it's kind of all over the place. It depends on how well you nail the interviews and stuff like that.
With the different jobs that you had available to take, what made you pick this one here in California? What were you looking for in a job offer?
One of the biggest things was just kind of how well I thought the role fit my skills and how enjoyable I thought the job would be. That was one of the biggest factors. Luckily, the largest offer matched up with, I think, the job that I would enjoy the most. So I didn't actually have too hard of a decision to make.
I think also why he chose California and why we decided to come here was we're probably never going to be able to live here ever again, just with how high the cost of living is. And so we decided that it would be a fun time in our lives to take advantage of it because we had the opportunity to.
I don't think we'd ever live here if we weren't working full time, unless we save up a ton of money.
Yeah, you would need a lot of money. I had an interview with a company out in the Bay Area. And I didn't know it was possible, but I was shocked at the cost of living there. And I'm in DC, so you know it's got to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's the number one highest cost of living area in the whole state right now. I think it passed Manhattan or it kind of goes back and forth with them, but it's crazy.
It is crazy. Once you're there, you get used to it, though. Because I remember I used to think it was nuts and the price I had to pay for my apartment and all that. But now I'm kind of desensitized to it because your ability to make money in that city is unparalleled anywhere else that I've seen.
The biggest difference in cost of living is that housing. It's how much you're paying for your apartment or your house or whatever else. Everything else has been pretty on par with Seattle. Seattle obviously isn't low cost of living, but it's mostly that housing number that just kind of jumps everything up a crazy amount. Everything else is kind of on par with what we've seen in other cities, like food and that sort of things.
Let's say it's like $1,000 or $2,000 more. So you could be paying between $12,000 to $20,000 more on housing a year. You will make more than $10,000 or $20,000 than you used to make before by living there. So I think it's a net benefit.
Yeah, especially if you're an engineer. You can come here and live comfortably and still save a lot of money.
Becky, are you taking advantage of relationships for your nursing jobs? I know there's tons of fine nurses in the California, San Francisco area.
I actually have not. Yeah, I probably should look at the Facebook forums and see if there's anybody in this area. I know that there's a couple clinics in this general area where we live that logistically it would make perfect sense if I could work there because I can walk to work and it's super convenient. And it's also in my specialty in women's health, and that would be perfect. But I'd really like to stay away from a hospital if I can. And I know that there's a ton. I mean, you can throw a baseball and hit a hospital anywhere here, but I'd really like to avoid that if at all possible.
Just so everybody knows, the nurse is not suggesting that you actually throw a baseball. She doesn't want people to get hurt.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Nasima, she doesn't live in that area anymore. I think she lives in more of the Lake Tahoe area, it seems. But she was talking about being a nurse, and I'm sure you heard the podcast episode she's been on.
I was thinking about this the other day, actually, because I just got approved for my nursing license in California, because that was a process in itself. I had to transfer my license over, and California is a little bit more strict on kind of not necessarily who they choose, and I didn't have to take a test or anything, but it was a big application process and quite a big fee to transfer. But I was like, oh, this is going to be the first job that I ever get where I don't know somebody, because both the job that I got in Chicago and the job that I got in Seattle, I had connections. So this is like the first time where I haven't had somebody helping me along. So it's definitely been an interesting thought process.
For sure. And for anyone listening who is a nurse in the San Francisco area and wants to hear someone's FI journey, we will link to Nasima's episode on Choose a FI in the show notes. Is there anything else that you guys want to chat about in this episode in terms of your financial independence journeys, how they've changed or how you've changed since the last time you came on the podcast?
One of the biggest things is, at least right now at this very moment, this could easily change, but we're not in like a super hardcore rush to get to FI, kind of like we might have been in Seattle. We're just kind of starting new jobs. So it's sort of a honeymoon period, like everything seems great. I don't know how long that'll last, hopefully a very long time. Right now, we don't really feel the urgency to like get to FI as fast as we can and maximize every dollar and get our savings rate as high as it possibly can be. We still plan on saving a good percentage of our income and putting that away and making our way closer and closer to FI every year. But there's less of an urgency. And I don't know if that will change because we're kind of just coming off this really long trip. I think that's one of the biggest things right now in my mind is that we're not urgently trying to get to FI as fast as possible, whereas we were doing that back in Seattle.
If you are in a position in your job where you're miserable and you're not liking your career choice and you're frustrated with your day-to-day life, take some time off and see what changes. Because for me, I was definitely burnt out. I was not happy. And being able to take this time and kind of figure out what I really want to do and have more control, it definitely changes your perspective of FI in general. I don't think I ever want to not work again, but I like having that control and that flexibility to kind of pick and choose what I want to do. And without this year, I don't think I would have ever come to that conclusion.
Cool. And before we go into the final two, let's do a rapid fire recap of your last year. So I'm going to ask each of you some questions. Becky, you first. What was your favorite memory on the gap year?
Probably the Grand Canyon. That whole week, so much happened, and it was probably the one week where the most problems occurred, but looking back, it was nothing and it was kind of funny. And it's exciting to look back at that whole week.
Noah, what was the most acutely stressful moment on the trip?
Driving through Manhattan, maybe?
Boston was definitely more stressful to drive in, I think, than New York.
New York, there are a lot of people, but Boston has streets that are actively working against you.
It's organized chaos for sure, driving around Boston.
Jay, I'm sure you have some different opinions on that.
I struggled a lot too, but mostly I take the train in whenever I go to Boston. I don't even bother with the cars for sure. But you know, it's historic. The way the streets are set up, it's cool. Okay, Becky, question for you. Did you meet any strangers or anyone on the trip that really stands out to you?
We met a couple on the cruise that we went on. There was this one guy on the cruise that came up to us and he basically looked at us and he's like, "You're really young to be on an 11-night cruise in the Caribbean in the middle of November." And so he's like, "Well, how are you here?" So that was kind of fun, kind of diving into our story. And they were 20 years older than us, but that was kind of cool just to share this experience with somebody else and get to hear their story as well.
And of course, all the awesome people that you met at Camp Phi Midwest.
Yes, absolutely.
Can't forget them.
Noah, what was your favorite location that you visited?
The national parks in general were like a huge highlight. We went to about a dozen of them. But I think the highlight of that highlight would be Zion National Park in Utah. We did the giant Angel's Landing hike where you have like 1,000-foot drop-offs on both sides. A little nerve-wracking, but you feel extremely accomplished when you get to the top. And we were just there on a perfect day. You could see everything. The sky was beautiful. It was just a great, great experience overall.
I know you guys are into Spartan races and American Ninja Warrior and all those things. Did you guys do any of those events on this trip?
We signed up for an American Ninja Warrior event down in San Diego, kind of to kick off our trip. It would have been in like the first month, but then they like canceled it right as we were starting our trip. And the most activity we kind of did in an organized fashion was a 5K. So no, we did not stay active with the obstacle course racing on this particular trip.
I would add, though, that fitness was a huge part of my year. I stayed active in running. I utilized the hotel gyms 3 times a week. I started lifting. So I definitely stayed more active than Noah did. He was a little bit more chill with his fitness. My whole fitness journey has been huge this year. And so I've definitely enjoyed that.
That's good to know, because sometimes when I travel, I notice that I get worse with eating and worse with fitness. So that's awesome that you guys were able to keep that up.
Half of us did, at least. We're very contrasted. I did hardly any fitness and Becky was super hardcore.
Noah, do you have any posts about how you use travel rewards for the hotel stays that we can link to in the show notes?
I do. I didn't post a lot on the trip and I haven't posted a lot since we finished up. I don't know if I'll start posting more or not. It's kind of an interesting thing. But to answer your question, yes, there's one called Hotel Stats from a year on the road. It was like the second or third most recent post, but it breaks down everything. We spent 1.5 million hotel points. It kind of breaks down how we earned them, where we spent them at. And it goes like for all 365 days that we were on the trip, like where were we at? So we're in hotels for 230 nights with friends and family for about 100 and then all the other things in there. So that would be the post to link to.
Okay, cool. We'll definitely do that. All right. Final two. Gwen, kick it off to you.
So if people would like to ask you more questions or read more about your trip, where can they find you?
The best way to contact me or us would be the blog Money Metagame. Then I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Money Metagame. If you wanted to see like our awesome scrapbook highlights from the trip, then just go to Instagram. We haven't kept it too active since we were on the trip, but we were posting every few days during the gap year. So that's the highlights of all the different cities and parks and everything else we visited. If you want to reminisce with us on all the cool places that we went.
Cool. And last question, I'll ask Becky this first. What is your wildest dream?
If I could just sit down at a piano and play anything, that would be amazing. I played off and on for like 10 years growing up and I haven't really gotten back into it and I really miss it. But if I could just be like a piano prodigy, that would be awesome.
And Noah?
I think last time I said I wanted to be a professional obstacle course racer, but I'm throwing that aside. And this time I've decided I'm going to star in my own Marvel superhero movie.
Somebody's been watching Endgame.
Of course.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't tell me. It's on the list for this weekend.
No spoilers. It's amazing.
I think we're going to go see it again this weekend.
I'm going to go see it again as well.
Ooh, I got this. I have Game of Thrones, all of my exciting content coming up this weekend. I can't wait. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on. We'll also link to the other episode you were on with us if anyone wants to compare what your experience was like planning the trip before and then the after in this episode. That'd be kind of cool. We recommend people go back to that and to check out your site. Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was good talking with you guys.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.